Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace. I'm your host, Sabine M. And in today's episode, you'll hear a webinar that I've been hosting together with my colleague, Raphael Morgulis. Raphael is our analyst relations manager.
Welcome everyone to this webinar. If you have come here for the slightly provocative title that you see here, No Guts, No Glory, we'll explain this in a very short time. But first, let us set the stage a little bit for this webinar. So in this session, we will be addressing why corporate real estate needs to become agile, which is the main thesis for a white paper that is titled No Guts, Glory. Before we go into the content and before we describe the session for today, we will present ourselves and I'll let Sabine start with herself.
Yeah, thank you, Raphael. So my name is Sabine M. I work for Locati as a thought leadership and research manager. And in that role, I'm kind of sitting in between the worlds of corporate real estate and software technology, trying to translate between the two, making them meet and seeing the utilities of each other. I used to work in corporate real estate at Siemens and Adidas and bringing a lot of the experiences there into what I'm doing at Locati now.
Thank you. Myself, Raphael Morgulis, I'm the PR and Analyst Relations Manager at Locati, and because due to this function, I have to stay attuned to the evolution of the market, of the latest research, of the latest best practices. That goes for, corporate real estate and workplace evolution, but different other areas, which will be quite handful for this particular webinar, since we will be talking a lot about agility. The stage is set, housekeeping rules have been given. So let's see what we will be covering today. So a quick introduction, of course. We will be presenting the findings from our white paper, No Guts, No Glory, Corporate Real Estate Embracing New Ways of Thinking and Working Will Revive Workplace Performance in a Hybrid Era. This is the title of our white paper that is based on a study that we conducted with Cornet Global. So after this introduction, we will present the methodology behind the survey, and then we will detail how the data shows and supports the idea that corporate real estate is embarking on a journey of transformation, of profound change. So there is disruption in corporate real estate. And then we will also use the data from the survey to underline how this evolution will take place. What are the actions and priorities that are needed to be undertaken for this transformation, for this change to be meaningful and productive? So, that being said, about the survey that we conducted, so this was developed by Locati and conducted by Cornet Global. We sent this survey to 97 respondents, global leaders from real estate and facilities management. And you will see on the slides the additional details regarding the demographics and the industry representation of the respondents. But here we will direct you to see more details in the actual paper, which we'll share a link to the chat during the session, or that you can find on the Cornet Global Knowledge Center or as well on Locati's website. So diving into the content, why did we use this No Guts, No Glory title? A simple answer, because we are in a crisis and everyone knows that, hopefully with the least possible consequences for everyone attending today. But there is a crisis nonetheless. And a crisis is usually the bedrock for significant change. And so this is why we are using this title, because change needs guts. There is no glory without having the courage to take the initiative for change in a crisis moment. To explain that also, we want to give a bit larger context. What has happened is that in the last two decades, businesses have been focusing on investing in rationalizing and optimizing their relationships with their customers. And technology and data have been catalysts for this change. And still today, it is a massive focus. There is still evolution in this particular focus. A lot of research, as I can see in my daily work, looking at analyst research and publications. Customer obsession is still very much a topic. But at the same time, gradually, also enabled by technology and data, businesses have started to look at other relationships that could be optimized through technology and data. And that includes their relationships with their employees. And so in this context of the rationalization of looking for optimization of touch points with employees, this is when the pandemic happened, in this kind of burgeoning moment. And this, of course, put everything to a halt. All of a sudden, the umbilical cord, if you want, between employers and employees has been completely severed. Everyone is at home. No one can go to the office. And so this has become a crisis. What do we do with the office? What happens with the office? As for all crises, we could see different stages of grief being portrayed in the media. For example, we had the example of a very large bank in simple denial, refusing to acknowledge the new reality that is being established and just saying, we will go back to the office as if nothing happened. We also saw some other types of reactions, such as negotiations, bargaining for a better outcome, more favorable outcome. And we saw some very, very large companies, Google and Apple, not to name them, very influential companies, have these kind of negotiations very publicly in the media. But now we're at a point where the reality sets in. It is pretty clear that in the majority of cases, hybrid is here to stay. And basically, the umbilical cord has been cut. And so now, the office is seeking a new function or a new definition or basically new answers.
Yeah, most of you will be going through that exactly and finding themselves in that search and negotiate phase where we're here. And I think the crucial thing currently is actually to be open for those new answers and not regard anything that you're putting out right now as the thing that's going to last, because in many cases in geography still, return to office hasn't become a reality by the hopes that it would at some point in time. And I think corporations more and more move away from looking at space as something that needs to be monitored for its usage, as to more of being a product that's offered to employees, that's actually offered to employees to lure them back to connect with the company goals and the community in there. And when we actually move now to one of our survey results on the next slides, we've asked people if their organizations would allow for flexible work schemes going forward. And we do see that 85% said they would, either full flexibility or 2 to 3 days of remote work, which brings us actually already kind of to a problem, because real estate, in the nature of things, is an asset that you buy long. And so the majority of respondents do have their portfolios structured in long-term leases or in even owned properties. And you can't get rid of them that quickly. So the common, I'd say, corporate real estate schemes move mostly around in the past, like sale and lease back or build to suit, which are in the end all focusing on balance sheet, profit and loss, cost, revenue ratios, these kind of things. And they don't really cut anymore for the future, because they're looking still at real estate as that resource that needs to be managed and not so much at the value that it could deliver. And as to address that flexibility problem, and I want to call it to the external dimension of it, there's been discussions around whether hospitality or retail models could be adopted in corporate real estate as well, where we have turnover rent or partnership agreements, for instance, based on occupancy, that would shift some of the responsibility towards the landlords. Because what the market's already seeing, I think just this week, there was a study out on London office market, that demand for Class A offices has actually not fallen, but on the contrary, risen. And Class B and C will be basically empty going forward, because organizations do understand that if they want to bring employees to the office, it needs to be a space that is really attractive. And Class B and C just will not cut anymore in the future. And what we see here as well, we've put here actually a survey result from another study we did earlier in the year, in the first half of 2021 on the US market. We've done the same for the Europe market. But in the US market, it's been really interesting that Pre-COVID, most of the respondents, 66%, still had assigned seats. And even after pandemic, 2 years looking ahead, they didn't think they'd go away from that. So 62% still stated they would have open plan or cubicles in place. In Europe, things looked a little bit different. There, many organizations had already applied activity-based working. Now, what we've seen already is this is still all focused very much on real estate as an asset class. But when we ask people what their most important decisions currently are that they're faced with, those don't really evolve around cost. They are more about the general definition of the office, the purpose of the office, looking at changing the workplace type mix, changing from fixed space to flex seating, we just had that, and determining optimal sharing ratios. So all questions of how to use the space in a way that supports work, that supports employees, that supports them in their productivity, and also in their well-being.
One thing that we can also note is that we can look at these kind of new decisions or most important decisions that need to be taken by corporate real estate managers. It's interesting to combine that sort of realization that there is a need for new ways, for willingness for change, to combine that the question that we asked corporate real estate leaders around what is required for change or for becoming agile as an organization. And here, corporate real estate leaders mentioned corporate mandates, power, budget, staff, and centralization as let's say key elements in order to enable agility. And this, if you take this strictly from an agile methodology point of view, is a complete contradiction. If we take the definitions of agile and how to implement it, these are really not the right places to start with. So you don't become agile by accumulating power or to have more or by having more budget and more staff. Agility is really starting small, looking at what can be done the fastest and do testing, smaller scales testing, and start incrementally delivering value over time and extending to larger bits of the organization. So it's interesting to see that corporate real estate leaders, on one hand, they want to move towards implementing flexibility. But on the other hand, when they think of what's required to implement this flexibility, they look at very heavy notions in order to enable that. And this is kind of compounded by the fact that notions such as upskilling of corporate real estate, transparency and agility, more data and clarity on direction, which are more fundamental to agility, actually, were very, very much lower ranked than let's say, power, budget, and staff. And so that points a little bit to a disconnection between what the function wants to achieve and what it understands in terms of the requirements to achieve it.
Brings us a bit to the internal dimension of the flexibility dilemma, I want to call it here, which is when corporate real estate is asked to make decisions or prepare decisions, we ask what are the key criteria that need to be met. And you find on top of the list space efficiency, but alongside with that, employee well-being, which I find very remarkable. And you find a long list of other things that influence decision-making. And one respondent actually called it the nature of the beast, that decision-making in corporate real estate is complex. And we had a look at the number of criteria that people used. And actually, 86% said that they used three or more criteria to make decisions. And that actually does not make things fast or agile. You can't act quickly if you need to cater to many stakeholders, which, of course, is necessary in organizations. But we need to think about to what extent that is actually helpful when we're experimenting around future work. And what then the more interesting point actually was that when we asked what the key point was to consider or to form a decision, and that you'll find that statistic on the next one, top of the list was cost and occupancy levels and employee satisfaction ratings only came at 46%. And that's still showing that really close tie between corporate real estate and finance and how they looked at things traditionally from that cost dimension. And I do think the change is actually what needs to happen here to look at space more as an investment in your employees as your brand ambassadors, and to take an honest look at all the offices you have in place and the design of the spaces and the layout, and really assess if that is contributing to employee satisfaction and inclusivity and the customer experience that organizations are striving to build for their employees. And that is kind of what we found in a summary to be a large problem, that organizations are looking the wrong way still.
I think what we can also add, coming back to an earlier statistic or data that we showed about, yes, the corporate real estate is still structured in relatively long-term constraints, but agility, coming back to that point, is also about looking at opportunities versus constraints instead of constraints, actually. And if you think about long-term availability of space, yes, it's a constraint, for example, from a financial point of view, but it's also an opportunity for testing. If you know that you are going to have that space, which is available, then it might be the possibility for you to set up the right stage in terms of having data, having the right tools, having the right skills in order to do the testing, in order to do the validation, and then to be a lot more ready when it comes to bigger decision making. And so those are, on one side, you can see it as constraints. You can also see it as opportunities. Another takeaway, I think, is that we see an industry that we saw that space efficiency and employee well-being are two crucial success criteria. But at the same time, there is lower maturity in terms of the data available for measuring the impact that the function has on employee well-being. And so here, you know, we have to look into how are we going to solve this issue to bridge the gap between the intention, which is to impact employee well-being, and the means that we have as an industry to tackle these. And so in terms of bridging that gap, that takes us to the second part of our demonstration, which is actually what are the required data and skills that are needed in order to effect this change towards making corporate real estate more agile. And here we found out that the insights most, let's say, favored are headcount projections, still a relatively high, let's say, consideration, followed by space utilization data, employee feedback, and employee mobility. And well, with space utilization data, we see that there is a function that wants to understand the demand, wants to understand the behaviors, not just take stock of numbers, but figure out what are behind those numbers. And this is having employee feedback and employee mobility as third and fourth is pretty positive reinforcement that CRE decision-making should not be made just top-down by corporate decision-making, by financial considerations, but also by taking into account, taking the context by the point of view of the end users. So there is a desire here to make the function and the operation of corporate real estate more user-centric, more human-centric. And this is a pretty positive sign, which we can also say, if we look at market data being only placed fifth, means that there is an understanding that we shouldn't just see what the market and what the others are doing and copying best practices or applying things that are relevant to other places. We should actually figure out our own demand, figure out our own users, and apply these insights to our decision making. So these are positive signs. And in terms of the skills identified as necessary for this evolution, we see here that scenario modeling, design thinking, and technology are being mentioned as the top three skills required for the evolution of CRE. And so before we interpret this, maybe I wanted to ask a question to Sabine, which is, what exactly is scenario modeling here?
Yeah, so I think just on the last slide, you made that comment about you need to find, or we need to find out about our own demands of our own organization. And that kind of ties back to that, because pre-pandemic, in the old days of office planning, what we did was look at the headcount projections, multiply that by a space budget, probably run that through a space calculation sheet where there were a couple of other ratios added to come up with the budget needed for meeting rooms and collaboration spaces. And at the end of that calculation, you would get what square meters or square feet you needed to rent or actually provide. In that model, you could use a sharing ratio to indicate that not everyone would have a desk, but it's still rather simple. And there were benchmarks on the market on what I'd say like a usual square meter usage was, or basically coming from the architectural standpoint as well, like that the desk space is 4 square meters. Now, all those assumptions have been tossed around because first, we don't want to provide only 4 square meters per desk anymore because we want to allow for distancing between people. So that can be thrown to the bin, kind of. And then the next thing is we're not expecting to our colleagues to come in every day anymore. So scenario modeling is what a lot of the interior designers and consultants have been turning to now to inform workplace strategies. And that would entail, again, assumptions around how many employees would take up companies on the offer to work flexible. And if they did, for how many days or how many hours a day would they do that? Then, of course, assumptions around when they come to the office, what kind of spaces will they go to? And all that would then be, again, run through a calculation sheet to come true through your floor and ceiling levels of capacity that you needed to provide. And while that can, of course, be helpful for decisions that need to be made now, it might lead you to actually false, or let's say, it might give you false security, because what people said in surveys that you've undertaken now might not be the reality. We're actually having a close look at that in our office as well. And we did exactly that survey, asking people how often they would like to come in. And I can tell you, looking at the booking and utilization data, everybody overestimated the time they would spend at the office, because even the people who said they'd come every day, they do have private issues that they tend to and then work from home. They do go on vacations, they do meet clients. So everybody's having kind of a wrong perception of the time they do spend in the office. So I actually think scenario modeling, while that's a really good skill generally to have, to be able to run these kind of things, I'd actually use a pragmatic approach and just have a very recent example from the LEGO group. I was lucky to talk to their head of workplace experience and attend a presentation he gave as well. And they had refurbished or remodeled their headquarters in Billund, Denmark, started that project before the pandemic. So they had no clue about what would come in terms of flexibility, but they did know that workplace experience is something they want to strengthen. So that was already part of their programming, that they wanted to provide spaces for learning and experience in community building. And what they did now was, coming from a space program where they had accounted for 70%, and don't count me exactly on the numbers, it's like estimated numbers, 70% on the desk space, 15 for meeting rooms and 15 to collaboration and community spaces. They have changed that programming now with the view that they still would reverse it if it's not the right thing to provide. So currently they're doing an equal third split. So it's a third, so 33% desk space, 33% meeting room, 33% collaboration. And I think that reversible part is what plays into that agility and growth mindset, being able to say, we'll test this on a small scale. And if that's not the right thing to do, we'll revise that decision.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think if we look at those 3 or 4 top, let's say, skills that are being favored here, we can interpret that also as a need to tackle uncertainty, right? So basically, we have a function, corporate real estate, which probably in the past has been quite trained to plan and to deal with, let's say, longer term considerations. Obviously, real estate is not exactly the paragon of mobility or flexibility or speed. And so by nature, the function was not necessarily attuned to going fast and to deal with a lot of uncertainty. But obviously, today and tomorrow, there is uncertainty and there is understanding that there is a new skill that is, or mindset that is required to tackle that and to get some answers for, to respond to this new context. So considering that, if we think that CRE was traditionally not necessarily exactly geared towards dealing with this new context, what would be the models or the functions, that the roles that CRE needs to take inspiration from?
Yeah. So to close it off, maybe there is this saying that I really like that says, we always think we need to figure things out to begin, but actually it's the opposite. We need to begin to figure things out and do that with an open mindset and venturing into very different branches. And we've gathered them here so that corporate real estate need to be strategists going forward. I don't think there's any question about that, but strategists that very much do regard data in the decisions they are making and a variety of data points going together. So not only the cost that is readily available, but digging a bit deeper into like the employee satisfaction data and all these things and marrying them to come to conclusions and always embracing that there might be contradictions in data points that you have and that some of them you will actually only clarify by either talking with someone on site or being on site yourself and seeing and experiencing for yourself where certain satisfaction or dissatisfaction may come from. And in that, so I put Brené Brown on here as an example of a philosopher, but more than that, she's actually a researcher that's a huge empath and has humanity and human behaviors at heart, actually embracing or telling us or advocating to embrace our vulnerabilities and be brave to show them. And I think that's actually the aspiration, to make the office a place that we do want to come to because we're allowed to be ourselves. We're allowed to do what we like to do. We are allowed to connect with something that gives us purpose, that gives us a mission, and to be with our community of colleagues. So that having that in mind as well. And then I have marketing as another, and more as marketing, actually, it's storytelling around the workplace, thinking about what does make customer experience and being very diligent, like marketing and retail are about their customer experience, in measuring those things and like finding out if people come to the shop, do they leave without buying because the music is wrong or because they don't like the lighting or the shop display and these kind of things? And exactly that's the questions we need to ask about offices as well. Do people come frustrated out of meeting room because it wasn't frictionless and they couldn't get technology to work? Or is that a place that they actually enjoy being in because it allows them to be creative and collaborate with their peers? So looking at all those things to define for the future what the office should be for your organization, because there will be different work styles and many, many companies have started that journey with employee surveys, but there might kick in some fatigue from employees. So that's why we can't only regard those surveys, but need to add those different layers of insights into the mix.
Yes, I think that takes us back to notion that we defend in our white paper, which is that corporate real estate as a function needs to become agile. And here, maybe we need to take a moment just to think more broadly, why agile exactly? Not just because it's a trendy, let's say, evolution recently, or not just because it resonates by and large with flexibility, but because agile working methodology is particularly effective at one thing in particular, which is to create progress and deliver value in contexts of extreme uncertainty. And as we've just discussed, this is basically the context that corporate real estate finds itself in. So it is extremely relevant. We don't know who comes back to the office. We don't know why. We don't know for what. And we don't know when and for how long, etc. So a lot of question marks. And here we can also think of product managers in software development contexts. Agile helps them first because at the initiation of a product, there is the uncertainty of, will this product work? Will this actually attract a customer? Will people buy this? And Agile helps in that by starting very small, testing very small versions of product, going fast and validating value incrementally in order to grow. This is the growth mindset. And of course, you can stop and think, CRE, it's office space, it's not a product. But you've mentioned that, Sabine, until now, the office had no alternative. So yes, indeed, it was not a product, it was an obligation. But today, it's actually competing. It's competing against work from home. It's been competing against shared workspace, possibly satellite offices, etc. And so the office has to become a product. It has to figure out what makes it more attractive than the alternatives. And for a more concrete question of how do we start this? How do we start agility in the corporate real estate context? And the answer has to be data. It has to start with creating the conditions that are necessary to actually do these kind of fast testing, fast iterations, fast validations. And for that, you need to have the data to actually figure out whether your testing is successful, if you are delivering value. And so here, you have to be able to collect data, to manage the data, and to track workspace data for the workspace today and for tomorrow. And for that, you need a certain amount of technology, you need a certain amount of tools, and you need a certain amount of skills. And these are the things that are, you know, the baseline requirements to create agility for the workspace. These are the kind of requirements. But Sabine, in your opinion, how do we get this started concretely for corporate real estate? How do we start the agility?
Yeah, I had two thoughts. So one was, I'm hearing a lot like, yeah, we can't really do anything because there is no data. People are not allowed to come to the office yet. And for some, that might be right. But I've heard an interesting point of view just this week as well. Someone was like, I don't really care if it's 80% utilization in my office or 10%. And actually 10% is better for testing because with the 10% utilization, I can really have a look at where do people go? What kind of spaces do they use? Are they mobile in the space when they can be? Because with an 80% occupancy level, there might not be choice to go to certain meeting rooms, desks, or whatever, because they're already occupied. But in this small scale, you can actually see what works for your organization and what are the functions that typically do come to the office and who do they collaborate with. So it's actually a very interesting time to start that now with a manageable data pool, actually, that is not too big, and to really test things out at specific locations, how they work. And then the second thing is, how do you set yourself up for that is to have a look at where you are at now first, because we all have certain processes and technology already in place. But the question is then, do we leverage that to the full potential already? And how can we make dots connect and change where we are currently in that readiness to translate insights into actions for the future to make that actually work? And how can we build a program if we identify there are gaps to come to that end state that we're thinking of, where we can allow for that kind of experimenting, identify those gaps, and then start to build a program that would allow you to basically bridge those gaps with the technology required, with the skill sets you're investing in. And that's actually things that I would argue for that you need to do immediately, because the time will come very quickly that you wished you had started it and you did have the data in place, because you'll otherwise always keep running for it. And again, in big organizations, it's always good to start getting advocates for the projects that you want to undertake, because we know it's not easy to get to a decision-making point. So get all your facts straight, identify where you want to be, and then go for that. And I think that's actually why we named the white paper the way we did, why we called it No Gods, No Glory. Actually taking a quote from someone I had on the podcast who very rightfully put it that corporate real estate needs to be brave to achieve things, will always meet resistance. There are 1,000 reasons not to do things because all of them cost money and are an investment of time and efforts and again, resources. But if you want to change the work of world, the world we're kind of living in, our working lives, we need to stand up for what we think is right and voice that.
Thank you. I think that's a fitting conclusion. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We have just released a study on data readiness in CRE, along with the opportunity to assess your organization's workplace insight score. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.